I don't know what was going on with Ted Cruz, but I do know that he asked her if she thought babies were racist. Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to a special reaction episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire News Group podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that may have bought a house but may not, because it's crazy out there for a house buyer.
Who's to say?
Who's to say? I'm Rewire News Group senior editor of law and policy, Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo, Rewire News Group's executive editor. Rewire News Group is the one and only home for expert repro journalism that inspires you to stick with it through these Ketanji Brown Jackson confirmation hearings. My word. And the Boom Lawyered podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So,
yeah,
this was the first big day. Yesterday was all, you know, preening and speechifying from the senators. And today, senators came out guns blazing, asking questions. And I don't know. I was predictably irritated at the predictable cast of characters. Mm-hmm. But generally, I thought it was just kind of like, you know, like there were some Republicans trying to make a big stink out of some things. But generally, it seemed like it was relatively low key.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was. Just sort of programming note, Imani and I have hopped out mid proceedings because seriously, these people keep talking. So, you know, we've got a few more senators to talk today yet, but the normalcy by comparison, like we're here making jokes about the fact that the senators won't stop talking, not that the nominee is frothing at the mouth about how much he likes beer.
Precisely.
Like, you know, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat some of the really ugly stuff that happened today, because some really ugly stuff happened and some good stuff too. But just the idea that it felt routine in some ways, mm-hmm. that it felt run of the mill, like the wheels weren't entirely off the tracks of democracy for a moment. It was refreshing.
It was refreshing. And but let's talk a little bit about what we saw today.
Right? Okay.
Let's do the good, the bad, and the ugly.
I love this.
All right. So let's start with the good.
Okay.
Dianne Feinstein was good.
What? Okay.
How did that happen? She's like 86 years old, and like there have been concerns about her mental faculties, which is a serious issue. Like, yeah. I'm not making jokes about that. So I don't know what was going on, but it seems like her staffers really, really prepared her, right? I mean, this was, I was pretty jazzed about DiFi.
I mean, she ate her Wheaties today. So these committee hearings happen by seniority. So unfortunately, we hear from the senators who have been on the committee the longest. Like, I think it was Senator Leahy who said he's been there for like 20 justices or something, like some inordinate amount of time. So DiFi out of the gates, you know, just blazing with the A word. Like, I think she said abortion is maybe the fifth or sixth word out of her mouth. She was just on it. She was like, hey, look, I'm going to talk about abortion. And I'm going to talk about how the last three Supreme Court confirmation hearings, we also talked about abortion, except the people before us were liars, because we're also going to talk about precedent and the fact that abortion precedent is probably going away. Where is that Dianne Feinstein all the time?
I mean, where was she last year or whatever, 2 years ago when ACB was confirmed and she went and like hugged,
right?
Not Newt Gingrich, but like some
white
Lindsey
guy.
Lindsey
Graham.
Lindsey Graham. I was like some white guy from the South. I don't know. but now that we're on Lindsey Graham.
Oh,
what the hell was Lindsey Graham on today? He came out like an angry little weasel. And the way, I mean, there was a lot of bananas shit that happened today, but I think one of the most bananas was Lindsey Graham asking Jackson, on a scale of 1 to 10, how faithful are you in terms of religion?
Right. Right. Yeah. If we're talking about this in terms of the good, the bad, and the ugly, Lindsey Graham falls into the bad category. Opening up with a question of rank your faithfulness to literally storming out in a huff. What was that? Like, I was laughing because I was listening. I wasn't watching. I had other things going on. So I'm like tweeting and listening and not like actually watching. And I was like to myself, oh, yeah, it sounds like he's literally about to take his ball and go home.
Yeah, he absolutely did.
And that's what he did.
And that's what he did. But let's go back to the good again. Let's go back to the good. Let's bounce back and forth. We don't want to hit everyone with all the good, the bad, and the ugly all at once. Blumenthal.
Oh, can you talk about this? This was such a moment.
Blumenthal,
I
want to
give you a lot of time on this.
He's like a soccer dad guy. Like, I'm pretty sure Blumenthal, at the end of the confirmation hearing, just went up to Jackson and said, would you care to come out for an ice cream cone? And, you know, they went and they maybe got an ice cream cone, a malt shake, and just shared feelings. Because what I loved about Blumenthal is that he asked her specifically to talk about the obstacles that she faced as a Black woman. And he asked her this not to give her a chance to talk again about the obstacles that she faced, but to talk specifically to women. He said, tell women and young girls, and then corrected himself and said, particularly Black women and young girls, what it's like to get to the point where you are, what obstacles you face, and let them know what they can expect so that they see themselves represented and know that they can do what you've done, essentially. It was a really beautiful moment, I thought. And I could tell that she appreciated being asked that question because, again, this is a historic occasion. This is a chance for her to show little Black girls, you know, that, yeah, you can become a Supreme Court justice, right? Mm-hmm. Like, little Black boys saw themselves in Obama. Yeah, you can become the next president. Now little Black girls are seeing themselves in her. And I think that that's a beautiful thing to celebrate.
Yeah, it was really such a moment. And you could see Judge Jackson get emotional in a really good way and to have the opportunity to, you know, address the public in that way. And I thought it was a really important moment strategically for the Democrats on the committee as well, because Blumenthal, in the line of questioning, was the last Democrat to question Judge Jackson before Josh Hawley. And I know we're not going to go into the ugly, which Josh Hawley is fully in the ugly right this second. But when you think about the role that the Democratic senators have to play in these proceedings, right, to effectively rebut all of this nonsense, and particularly the really racist bad faith shit that we saw and heard today, what Blumenthal did was give Judge Jackson a break and absolutely an opportunity to tell her story before Josh Hawley started to smear her with allegations that literally everybody who's operating in even a modicum of good faith has run away from on the conservative side.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Josh Hawley. Let's do an ugly because...
Yeah. All right, he's one of our uglies.
Oh my God, it was... He sat there for 30 minutes and described in detail sexual crimes committed against children.
Yep.
I mean, like, he would say, well, there's an 11-minute video of a 11-year-old boy committing a sexual act, and here's a 14-minute video of two 12-year-old girls committing. He did this for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, it became very creepy.
Yeah.
Right? Because he was clearly trying so hard to paint her as someone who was soft on crime, who was soft on pedophilia, who routinely under-sentenced people who were found to have child sex abuse materials. And it was gross, and it's obviously not true. We've already talked about how it's not true. So Hawley was just in there making a fool of himself and being really ugly and also really sus. Like, why are you talking about sex crime so much, Joss? Joss. Joss. Like Joss Stone. Like, but seriously, Josh. Yeah. Joshua, what is your deal?
Yeah.
What's your deal?
And to Dick Durbin's credit, he gave Josh Hawley several opportunities before his time had come up to abandon this mission.
Yes.
Right? And like all the cover in the world. And the thing is, Democrats are such good faith players in these proceedings. They would have been like, look what a stand-up guy Josh Hawley is for abandoning this bad faith line of attack. Like, they literally would have probably given him credit for it too, which is what kills me. But it didn't matter. Josh Hawley went for it. And none of it is based in, you know, I mean, look, he's counting on the fact that most folks, hell, I don't even understand sentencing commission guidelines and the differences in all of these criminal law cases. Like, do you think folks who never have gone to law school, right? Like, you Absolutely. Know, the regular folks that conservatives love to talk about, they're guaranteeing that folks are going to be confused by this and just going to outrage. But it's dangerous. Like, this is chumming violent waters, and Hawley knows this.
And it's happened to candidates before.
Yeah.
It's happened to, I think it was the Attorney General of Massachusetts who got death threats recently. There was another black politician in the, like, in the Vermont, New Hampshire area who literally resigned from her job due to death threats. So this is, they know what they're doing. They know that their base is violent. Just look at the truck convoy that's still circling the Beltway for some reason. Look at the Proud Boys. Look at everything that we've seen since the rise of Trumpism. Hawley knew what he was doing. He's not an unintelligent man, but I think it was, I don't know, who was it yesterday? I think it was John Fugel saying, we were on his show and he said, he's not unintelligent, but he's not wise.
Yes.
And I think that that is a very, very good way to describe Josh Hawley. It was ugly.
Yeah.
And unnecessary.
It was.
But.
Oh.
Go ahead. No,
no,
please.
You go. I think we're going to say the same thing.
We were going to talk about Hirono.
Yes. I want it because it's strategic and she was such a palate cleanser and she kicked his ass rhetorically.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
But you go. You start there. I love that we were also both like.
But very excited. Right. So Hirono squealing out of the gate, just boop, 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 guns blazing, asks the same question that she asked Brett Kavanaugh right out of the gate. Have you ever been credibly accused of sexual assault or rape, or ever been accused of sexual assault or rape? And Jackson said no. And Hirono moved on. But it hung there in the air, right? Everyone knew what she was talking about. Everyone knew what she was doing. Because yesterday, we heard these senators complaining ad nauseum about how horrible Democrats had been to Brett Kavanaugh during the Kavanaugh hearings and how that wasn't going to happen here. You know, the implication being that Republicans are so much better behaved and well-mannered that they wouldn't dare ask about her quote-unquote dating habits.
Right.
I mean, the reason that there's no there is because Jackson isn't a rapist.
I mean.
And that's really all, that's all it is. People weren't agitating about Kavanaugh for shits and grins.
Yeah. And, you know, props to Senator Hirono's staff, who must have gathered all of the information about these, child pornography sentencing cases and just had a point-by-point rebuttal to Josh Hawley. That's not the kind of work that Judge Jackson can do herself in these hearings. It would literally be impossible unless, you know, you had the super brain of all super brains to retain that level of detail. But also, that's not appropriate. So the Democratic senators in these instances have to do some of that work. And, you know, again, Hawley could have abandoned this absolute bottom feeding line of attack. Everyone gave him an opportunity. He didn't do so.
Nope.
Hirono's staff had Senator Hirono ready to respond. And I thought she came back very forcefully, noting the number of judges that Hawley himself had voted to confirm who had, for example, done greater departures, you know, and literally just pushing that back to draw attention to the fact that there's no there in these allegations, and it's all designed to create Fox News clips and, you know, further midterm and, you know, in some of these cases, presidential aspirations.
There was a sincere effort by some of these Republicans to try to rattle her and to try to make her mad. I really think they wanted to make her mad so they could have that 5-second clip of her rolling her eyes or of her getting irritated so that they could just repeat that ad nauseum on Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't give it to him.
I mean,
she
didn't Tom give Cotton? It to him. Tom Cotton.
I mean, yeah, let's talk about Tom Cotton. He was downright hostile.
Yeah.
And his questions were absolutely ridiculous.
Do you eat babies, Judge Jackson?
He was like, do you like murderers? How much do you like murderers, Judge Jackson? He was asking questions like, do you think that we should imprison more or fewer murderers?
Right.
And Jackson kept saying, well, that's not my job as a judge. That's a policy decision. Those are sentencing guidelines. She's like, oh, okay, fine. So I guess you don't care about murderers. So do you think that we should the heinous crime of rape? Do you think we should put more rapists in jail or fewer rapists in jail? Again, that's a policy decision. It's not the job of it. Oh, fine. So you love rape. I mean, and he went on with this, with assault, with a couple of other, you know, violent crimes, all the while touting this statistic that violent crimes and murders have gone up in the last year. Well, yeah, they have, because everyone was locked down in 2020 and no one had time to commit murder. You know what I mean? Like, it is ridiculous. If you look at no one had time to be murdering people. But if you look at the statistics, crime has been dropping steadily. And there's a little blip up because, a year of people inside, not a whole lot of murdering going on, except for in the home, which, you know, is tragic. But Jesus, this idea that somehow he was playing gotcha by asking her if she liked rape, if she liked murder.
Right. And, you know, Senator Booker was the senator who followed Senator Cotton. And I thought he did such a great job rebutting this nonsense out of the gates by pointing out that it's actually black men who represent the highest number of murder victims. And it's not as though Tom Cotton is out there advocating for the rights and well-being of the black community, let alone black men. Yeah. And he did it in that Cory Booker way where you're totally disarmed and you don't know that he's coming for you because he's given like five dad jokes and like talked about, you know, sending brownies to your mom or whatever, like all of the Cory Booker stuff that he does.
Yeah. And so I do want to say about Cory Booker, like before we had to hop off and record this podcast, there was just a lot of blackness in that hearing room just going on between Booker and Jackson. It felt like a really intimate moment between them where they were talking about their growing up, you know, because Cory Booker is of mixed race. Ketanji Brown Jackson's kids are of mixed race. She's related by marriage to Paul Ryan.
So weird.
And so the two of them were talking about, we had black folks in the house and white folks in the house. And Cory Booker ended by saying something like, you know, the spirits of your ancestors, they have their hands on you at that table right now. Your parents are proud of you, but your ancestors are proud of you. And black folks, we're always talking about our ancestors. And so that was a very black moment. And it was really, really lovely to see. And it came at a time, I think, when Jackson needed it because she had been harangued by Tom Cotton for ridiculous things in a manner that was meant to rattle her and piss her off. But she didn't. She didn't get rattled. She didn't get pissed off because she's cool.
I agree. Except Cory Booker also called Ted Cruz's friend, Imani.
Well, I mean.
And I mean, Ted didn't behave himself today.
No, but Cory Booker's gonna Cory Booker. You know what I mean? If there's one senator who's gonna like push his book bag off the chair next to him and be like, buddy, you can have lunch next to me, it's gonna be Cory Booker.
And you know what? He's Ted the better Cruz person for that, probably. But Ted Cruz.
Because you know when Ted Cruz walks into the Senate cafeteria, everyone just puts their briefcase on the chair next to them and looks down at their food. And he just walks through with his tray, looking around like that quintessential scene you see in a high school teen movie.
So I want to talk about Ted Cruz because, I mean, I don't actually want to talk about Ted Cruz.
Really?
To be clear, I never want to talk about Ted Cruz, but we kind of have to talk about Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, as we expected, pretty awful. But I think this might be the first time I have seen Ted Cruz be awful with exhibits. He brought charts.
God. He had charts. He had charts. He had books.
There was a flow chart of nonsense?
Of absolute, utter nonsense.
What was going on with that?
I don't know what was going on with Ted Cruz, but I do know that he asked her if she thought babies were racist. And I honestly think that happened pretty early in the proceedings today. What do you do with that?
I don't know.
What she did was sigh and then pause for a long... It was like a black woman, like Harriet Tubman felt that sigh in her grave. You know what I mean? Like Fannie Lou Hamer was like, oh, Lord. I mean, it was absurd. And then she calmly answered the question, said, I don't know what those books are. I haven't read those materials. I don't use CRT in my jurisprudence. Back off, buddy.
And this was all in connection with some, you know, work or, you know, Judge Jackson's experience on the board of the Georgetown Day School, which is a private school. Right. By the way, Amy Coney Barrett was also on the board of a private school, and there were no curriculum concerns from Ted Cruz there, just pointing that out. And also, I think it's important for our listeners, because they may not know this, that Georgetown Day was actually pretty important in helping desegregate a lot of D.C. education. So there's a reason why Ted Cruz and conservatives come for race, education, all that stuff in bad faith. And he was just on it and then tried to make a dust up about records. Like, think of all of the worst Ted Cruz things he probably could have done. And he did most of them.
He did most of them. He complained about the 1619 Project.
Yeah. You were tracking the racisms.
Yeah, I was tracking the racism. I awarded him 11 billion racism.
I mean,
but I have a friend who is, shout out to Tyler. My friend Tyler was literally doing spreadsheets and pie charts for the racism. So if you go to Rewire Newsweek's Twitter feed, you can see my friend Tyler's racism's done today's pie chart. But yeah, Ted Cruz was far and away the winner, far and away. And, you know, he tried to make us think about records, as you said. And Dick Durbin just shut him down, was like, bro, Kavanaugh? Do you remember Kavanaugh? And right. then it turned out that the information Ted Cruz said that he didn't have was in the document.
Right.
He just hadn't read it.
I mean, Ted Cruz didn't do his homework.
Shocking.
Okay. So, you know, we've been lambasting a lot of these folks. I want us to talk about Senator Cornyn because he had a chilling and dangerous line of questioning that I really think is important for our listeners to hear about because it's something that you and I have been talking about on this podcast for a while now.
Yep.
So, conservatives are coming for marriage equality, folks. Cornyn just said it. He had an entire line of questioning to Judge Jackson asking whether or not Obergefell, marriage equality, should even be considered good law. Like, all of this was clearly, A, they know they've won the Roe battle, but also, you know, now they're signaling very loudly they're coming for marriage equality. How did they signal it? By one, insisting that marriage is a religious institution and not a civil one, right? So that would either create a religious carve-out or take marriage out of civil governance entirely, right? So there's that. And then followed up on all of this talk of substantive due process, which we've gotten into a lot on the podcast, and how the court will make up rights and what cases should, you know, how long should rights exist before they can go be overturned. He wasn't shy about it. We used to hear conservatives talk this way about Roe 10 years ago. Right. And folks were like, no way. Like, that's the fringe. No way this would happen. And I need folks to understand that the only difference between Obergefell getting decided as marriage equality is the law of the land and now is the court reversing it is the makeup of the court.
Yep.
They have a different court and they're going to go for it. And I think it's notable that it comes out from Texas, right? Texas is doing trial balloons in their state right now between going after trans kids and their families. The fact that they have this zombie law that would allow folks to try and opt out of marriage equality that's still on the books that, like, Abbott has suggested he's interested in testing the limits of, thanks to Jonathan Mitchell and SB8's private enforcement mechanism. Like, the genie's out of the bottle, and here we have Cornyn, who then, as if that wasn't bad enough, couches all of this to Judge Jackson by using Dred Scott and Plessy versus Ferguson as the hypothetical center of this experiment for him.
Right, because don't you know that the same substantive due process rights that give you marriage equality and that give you abortion also were used to keep slaves in chattel slavery, didn't you know? And, like, really, you're going to ask the black lady that question? It was just, that was a racism for Cornyn. That was a huge racism. And it was a gross question.
Yeah.
It was a gross question.
It was a gross question.
And just to, I get the sense that there are people who are, even progressive people, who still, after you said what you said, aren't going to understand and believe that they're coming for marriage equality because that is way too far over the line. Well, let me tell you.
It's settled law, Imani. It's settled law.
It's settled law. It's precedent. The Supreme Court always respects precedent. Well, let's talk about Senator Mike Braun of Indiana.
I mean.
Who came out and said today, out loud with his face hole, that the court was wrong to legalize interracial marriage and that it should be left to the states.
Right.
Right. And of course, if you ask him, oh, so are you racist? No, I'm not saying that black and white people shouldn't get married. How offensive. I'm just saying that states' rights, because states' rights has never been used in the history of the world to oppress black people.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any limiting principle for conservatives, Jess? Is there anything at all?
I mean, I think the limiting principle is that anybody who's not a white Christian dude can't do anything. Like, that's the limiting principle. But honestly, Cornyn opened the door for this. And, it, you know, I mean, Mike Braun's a U.S. senator. He's not far afield, right? This isn't some, like, you know, right-wing blogger, if they, like, right. whatever. This is somebody elected to the U.S. Senate who's questioning the legal basis for interracial marriage, which is the same basis as all the laws that we've talked about. So, you know, this is absolutely that critically serious. They are not stopping with abortion. They're mm-hmm. not stopping with birth control. They've said that all of these fundamental rights that have effectively created opportunities for progress for anybody who is not a white cis guy are targets, and they have the court to do it. And, you know, when folks say, why do these confirmation hearings matter? It's all theater and all of that. Yes, it is all theater. But in that theater, conservatives have the opportunity to project their policy paranoias and priorities. And that's what we've seen.
And I would be remiss if I did not point out that when it comes to religious carve-outs, religion was used to uphold policies that denied Black and white people the right to marry, right?
Exactly. Like, their
religion was used for anti-miscegenation laws.
Yep.
Just like religion was used to uphold slavery, just like religion is being used to deny gender-affirming care to trans kids, just like religion is being used to get back into gay folks' bedrooms. I mean, this is targeted. They are making a claim that Christian evangelicals are somehow under siege in this country and that they need religious carve-outs from everything, because a sincerely held religious belief can be basically anything that these persons say they believe in. And the courts don't question it. We saw that in Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobby says, yeah, birth control's an abortifacient. The court says, sure, why not?
I mean,
so what do we have for tomorrow? What's on deck for tomorrow?
Well, more of this nonsense, except except it's a little shorter, thankfully. Senators today had 30 minutes of airtime. Tomorrow, they get 20 minutes. You know, they didn't finish all the rounds of questioning today. Marsha Blackburn may, for all I know, be talking right now about the evils of birth control.
I'm okay with missing it.
You know, who knows what is happening there? We will find out shortly. So,
she's drinking,
you know,
a box of wine at the podium. Right out of the bladder.
Teasing her bangs while
teasing
she's
her bangs and drinking Franzi out of a bladder.
I love that. So, no, but truly, tomorrow, one of the highlights, I think, will be Senator Ossoff, and not just because, it's Senator Ossoff, but truly because I think all of the white nonsense that was on display today, he has an opportunity to really come out strongly against as one of the younger members of the cohort. Yeah. And then Thursday is the day of witness testimony. Most of the senators won't even be in the room for that. We're not doing live coverage of that. Those statements are available at the Senate Judiciary website. And, you know, we see if they make a mountain out of nothing with this document request. I appreciated Durbin being like, seriously,
he
Ted,
was like,
who has the time?
Shut
By the
up,
way,
Ted.
The Washington Post has your answer right here.
Right. It's just, and he was so outraged, just a fake outrage. Ugh, these people are the worst. Well, if you want to talk about how these people are the worst, you can follow me at Angry Black Lady. You can follow Jess at Hegemommy. You can and should follow Rewire News Group, because I'm going to be on the ones and twos.
Imani has just been crushing the live tweet of these hearings.
Tiring.
Like, superpower, like superhero Avengers status, honestly.
I appreciate it. Well, I'm going to be doing it again tomorrow. And if you like our coverage, and if you like our podcast, frankly, if you like us personally, you should give us money. RewireNewsGroup.com/donate. RewireNewsGroup.com/donate. Give us everything you got. What's in your pocket? And on that note, what are we going to do?
We're going to see you on the tubes, folks.
See you on the tubes, folks. We get it, buddy. We get it.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piclo and Imani Gandhi. Mark Folletti produces the show.